With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Wednesday, July 26th. Coming up in today's show, a new program to help rural teachers teach their students about agriculture. And support for a new USDA nomination. More on both of those in just a moment, but first we're starting this morning with Taylor Hillman.
Overwhelming positive response to California's Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program will keep the program running for another 4 years, bypassing the need for a referendum. The California Department of Food and Agriculture announced the extension in response to a series of hearings held in June. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross said in a press release, quote, "The feedback CDFA received from the industry was overwhelmingly supportive of this program. It has never been more important to protect California's citrus farmers, which represent a $3 billion economic driver for our state and 20,000 jobs." CDFA said they didn't receive a single negative comment or response about the program during the hearings or written submission period. The extension approves both the CPDPP and the committee that governs it. The two were established in 2009 and are funded by industry assessments and both state and federal funds. The goal of the program is to advise efforts to limit the spread of the Asian citrus psyllid and the deadly disease the bug carries called Huanglongbing. The first ACP was found in California in 2008, which led to the proactive formation of the CPDPP. The first HLB case in California was found in 2012, and there have been a total of 70 trees confirmed with the disease in California. All of the confirmed trees were located in residential areas of Southern California. Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Committee Chairman Nick Hill said in a release, quote, "This program has evolved as the threat of the Asian citrus psyllid and Huanglongbing has progressed in the state, which is one of the reasons why we've been successful in keeping the disease out of commercial groves. Having learned from our partners in Florida, outreach has occurred throughout the state and to urban areas. Treatment corridors have been engaged to make sure growers are working together for maximum effectiveness against the pest, and scientific research has been supported." To learn more about the Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program, Asian citrus psyllids, and Huanglongbing disease, you can find the CPDPP online at citrusinsider.org. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
And we go now to Brian German.
Growers who are having trouble controlling Liguus populations recently got some good news. Roger Isom is the president and CEO of the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association. He noted that for the first time in quite a while, a Section 18 crisis exemption has been issued, which authorizes the use of the pesticide Transform to be used to fight Liguus in California cotton fields.
It's a product used in a couple other states through Section 18 specifically to combat Liguus. And it's a very effective product. It's the first time we've been able to get it. Very narrow use, but we've got it, and literally Friday night was the first time we could use it. We've got it through August 4th, so hopefully we can address this Liguus problem. We're also asking EPA for an extension beyond that and trying to get a full-blown Section 18, which means we could use it throughout the cotton growing year.
Dow AgroSciences has been working on getting enough supply of the product into California to combat the unprecedented levels of Liguus seen in cotton fields this year. I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
While some lawmakers have voiced concerns, agriculture groups this week vocalized support for the nomination of Sam Clovis to a Department of Agriculture position. President Trump announced he would nominate Clovis to serve as the USDA Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics, which also serves as the department's chief scientist. Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow, Senate Appropriations Committee Ranking Member Patrick Leahy, and Senator Chris Coons, all Democrats, have questioned the nomination because Clovis does not have a scientific background. However, more than 20 agriculture groups signed a letter to Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Pat Roberts expressing support for the nomination. The groups, including the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives and the American Farm Bureau Federation, said USDA already has a lot of scientists. The letter stated they do not need a peer, they need someone to champion their work before the administration, the Congress, and all consumers around the world. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey has bad news for the drought-stricken spring wheat. Here's Stephanie Ho with more.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey does not paint a pretty picture for this year's drought-stricken spring wheat crop.
I guess we finally hit rock bottom on condition for spring wheat. Really nowhere to go, but up from this point, we see 33% of the crop rated good to excellent, down a point from last week, 40% very poor to poor, but that's also down a point, so it kind of washes out.
He compares this to the spring wheat crop a year ago.
Last year at this time, we had more than twice the crop rated good to excellent, 68%, and just 7% very poor to poor.
He says 96% of the spring wheat has headed.
A lot of the heads have filled as much as they're going to, and with forecasts calling for more generally dry weather, it's really past the point of any recovery at this point.
He says he does not expect more sharp declines in condition, but no major improvements either. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Genomic testing is setting the Holstein breed apart, not only in numbers, but also through emphasis on breeding healthier dairy cattle. Darren Wilhite has more.
Genomic testing is helping more and more Holstein producers breed the cows they want. More than half of the Holstein pregnancies in the U.S. in the last year have been from genomic-tested bulls. In the overall Holstein population, 35% of animals identified in 2016, or more than 400,000 Holsteins, were genomic-tested. That's more than any other dairy breed in the world. So what's next for genomics in the Holstein breed? Lindsay Warden, Executive Director of Holstein Genetic Services for Holstein Association USA, shares this.
One thing that we're already seeing and we're going to continue to see is just more tools to help breeders breed the kind of cows that they want. There's a major emphasis on breeding healthier cattle, and the industry is working towards making those part of the national evaluation system.
Genomics has shifted breeders' focus from proven bulls to young sires. Although older bulls are still valuable in the industry, Warden says that young bulls have much better information available.
That's just really pushing us further forward because, you know, we're using the bulls at an earlier age. We're doing embryo transfer work on heifers at a young age. So we're really increasing that generation interval, which just accelerates your genetic progress.
That genetic progress is accelerating at an astonishing rate. Compared to other dairy breeds, the enormous Holstein-based population has more than 2.5 times more animals compared to all other dairy breeds combined.
It really comes down to the quality and the size of our gene pool that we have in the Holstein breed. We just have a tremendous amount of information coming into the system that really can't even come close to being matched by any other breed.
Genomics can be a helpful tool in selecting which heifers a dairy producer might sell, or for herds that utilize in vitro fertilization or embryo transfer to identify donor or recipient cows. If a dairy producer has a set of full siblings, genomics are a great tool for sorting through those animals to select the ones that inherited the best set of genetics.
The bottom line with genomics is that whatever decision you're trying to make, genomics gives you more accurate data to base that decision on than just looking at a pedigree and relying on the parent average genetic values alone.
For more information, visit HolsteinUSA.com. For Holstein Association USA, I'm Darren Wilhite.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. And now for the Naval Orange Worm Degree Day Report for Pistachios, sponsored by Dow AgriSciences and Intrepid Edge Insecticide. Degree days are determined using the calculator at the UC IPM website. All locations use CMIS weather stations. As of July 23rd, the degree day total for Denier, 1,894. That's up 151 in the last 7 days. For Merced, 1,859. That's up 144 in the last week. For Firebaugh, 2,103. That's up 171 in the last week. For Pinoche, 1,852. That's up 146 in the last week. For Tranquility, 2,298. That's up 184 in the last week. For Parlier, 2,275. That's up 176. Degree days for 5 Points, 2,447. That's up 165. For Coalinga, 2,308. That's up 188 in the last week. For Stratford, 2,271. That's up 174. For Delano, 2,190. That's up 165. Blackwell's Corner, 2,174. That's up 191 in the last week. Degree days for Lost Hills, 2,412. That's up 184. For Shafter, 2,263. That's up 175 in the last week. And for Arvin, 2,488. That's up 197 in the last week. NOW Degree Day reports are sponsored by Dow AgriSciences and Intrepid Edge Insecticide. This report, as well as past reports, can also be found on our website, agnetwest.com.
Well, in today's livestock news, farm and livestock groups continue to fight for an exemption from emergency reporting of manure emissions after the EPA recently lost a federal court decision to environmental groups that sued over the exemption. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit denied a request by pork, poultry, and other livestock and farm groups to rehear its rejection of an EPA exemption from 2008 U.S. manure emission reporting regulations. American Farm Bureau's Andrew Wamsley argues that hazardous substance reporting is unnecessary for manure.
We've been working with our first responder communities and those that receive these reports saying, yeah, we really don't need them. But because of the court vacating them back in April, we've been working with EPA, working with the Hill to try to find a solution.
Wamsley and other ag leaders expect EPA to ask the court to stay its decision and give the agency more time to figure out a way forward. Without a stay, AFB, the National Pork Producers, Poultry and Cattle Groups fear more lawsuits by environmentalists.
There's opportunities for mischief, and that's what we see, what we call the conflict entrepreneur, see it as another opportunity to misuse the law for outside of its intentions to go after hardworking farmers and ranchers.
Wamsley added there's no way scientifically to measure manure emissions, creating a reporting headache for producers while possibly overwhelming emergency call centers. AFB, NPPC, and other groups hope EPA can come up with a regulatory way out of the manure reporting mess. Flexibility is a part of the framework in a new plan for preparation of and response to any emerging animal diseases in livestock and poultry. With more on that story, here's Rod Bain.
It's been 3 years in the making, and now available to stakeholders from livestock producers to government veterinary officials, an emerging animal disease preparedness and response plan. As Leanne Thomas of USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service Veterinary Services explains, this plan is a living document.
We may find that there is a situation that arises with a new emerging animal disease that requires us to tweak the plan a little bit.
Flexibility, that Thomas says, is important in responding to emerging animal diseases and developing options among several stakeholder groups for immediate response to minimize impacts.
The general overall framework or process would likely remain the same. It's just the small component may be changed to address a new situation that we hadn't considered with an emerging animal disease.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. And a top official from Mexico expects between 6 to 9 rounds of negotiations between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada on the North America Free Trade Agreement. The three countries had already agreed to an aggressive timetable to broker a deal on NAFTA to avoid politicizing Mexico's presidential election coming in July of next year. The first round of NAFTA talks is due to begin in Washington on August 16th. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Now, if I said bovine spongiform encephalopathy, you probably wouldn't know what I was talking about, so I'll just say mad cow disease. Now, I know, but very few people were aware of how it hit American agriculture right in the stomach. One case sent the cattle world and the American beef export market into chaos. Practically the whole world slammed the door shut on American beef, and no less than 5 American trade and commerce organizations were pressed into quick service to try to avoid total calamity. Quick negotiations were started with China, Japan, and a dozen other countries. Fortunately, there was more scare than danger, so after the initial disruption, things slowly returned to normal, but it did cost millions and millions of dollars. And that's AgriView for today. Every Griner, AgNet West.
Soybeans don't get a whole lot of attention in California because they're not one of the more than 450 crops that we grow a ton of. However, the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council has partnered with U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance to start a program to help urban teachers learn more about agriculture so they can teach it to their students. And one of their kickoff locations is Sacramento, California. The focus, I should point out, is on farming in whole, not just soybean production. Cindy Zimmerman talks with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council CEO to get more information.
I'm speaking with Tom Slenica, CEO of the Minnesota Research and Promotion Council, and I'm talking to him about a new partnership with the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance to really educate teachers about agriculture. Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, Cindy, we couldn't be more excited about this program with USFRA. Agriculture continues to have to reach out to consumers all across the U.S. to make sure they understand that good work the farmers are doing, and not only feeding the world, but making sure that our environment stays safe and that we're sustainable. This is one of those types of programs where we hope to teach the teacher, literally. So we've partnered with them to create a program that will allow teachers to come in this summer, learn about agriculture, and be able to take home tools that they can use in their classroom, all free of charge.
Right. And the dates that you're coming up, you're going to do the 29th and 31st of August. So right about the time back to school. And you're going to be doing this in Minneapolis and Sacramento. So I wanted to say Minneapolis makes sense because it's Minnesota. But why Sacramento? Why did you choose that?
You know, that's the point of Sacramento is that agriculture and the food that we eat it goes all across this great country, and we get as much food from California as California gets from Minnesota. We want to make sure that teachers in large cities have the opportunity to hear the story of agriculture, have the tools to help them teach, and be able to get that message across to all consumers, regardless of where they are. We really hope this program grows and that, that this program will exist in many, many cities across the United States.
So you're actually going to have teachers sign up for this and you're going to take them out on the farm, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to get to go out on the farm. They're going to get to talk to real farmers. They're going to have a really nice day out on the farm. And then they're going to get tools that they can use in their classrooms, including a 3D visual aid that they can share with their students. So it's a self-contained audio-visual tool that they can share amongst their students. And all of this is free of cost, compliments of U.S. farmers and the checkoffs that they pay.
Right. And the Discovering Farmland curriculum that has been developed through the Farmland movie by U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance is going to be a big part of this. Well, really tell me, Tom, why is the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council part of USFRA? Why is it important to you?
You know, all of the state organizations like ours, you know, work day to day to try to convince consumers about what agriculture is doing in the right way. But sometimes we need to come together as a collective voice. USFRA connects row crop agriculture with animal agriculture because when it comes to the food we eat, consumers don't think about, well, soybeans or the pork chop that I'm going to have or the various other things that they're going to choose from. They think about food in general. So it's great that agriculture has found an organization that speaks to consumers in a collective way and in a way that they're interested in listening to.
Well, yeah, and there's so much about agriculture that's so interesting, especially like new uses for crops like soybeans. I just read about a product that I think I heard of from your organization. It's made from soybean oil that actually helps with road maintenance. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's several byproducts that come off of the production of soybeans. Of course, soybeans are primarily used in this country to feed livestock, but the side product of that is the oil. Now, sometimes we can refine that oil, and we can find it in cooking oils, but a lot of times that oil is refined in a different way. And we've found that soybean oil, which is completely biodegradable, it's a great product for the environment, will actually help maintain paved roads. So we can extend the life of the paved road in front of your house by as much as 3x of what you currently get. Because what happens is that when soybean oil is used in these products, the road stays soft and supple, and it doesn't crack in the freezing and thawing process. So it keeps that road viable, and then there isn't any toxic chemicals that are leaching off those roads getting into our waterways. So it's a really win-win product, and it's available today, and cities across the U.S. are starting to use it. They're saving money for taxpayers, and they're doing a great thing for the environment.
And that is definitely something that your average consumer doesn't know about the other products that can be made from corn and soybeans. Well, and again, we would like to encourage any teachers in the Sacramento or Minneapolis area to sign up for this Discovering Farmland Teacher Awareness Program, sponsored by USFRA and the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. The date's August 29th for Minneapolis and August 31st for Sacramento, California. To sign up, go to fooddialogues.com/teacher-awareness-program-Sacramento or Minnesota. Anything else you'd like to add, Tom?
Please pass the word on. We're all in this together, so let's see if we can help the next generation to learn about agriculture in the right way.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom Slenica with the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers. But these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
What's happening below the surface can mean success or failure for your crops. New MycoApply Endomax from Valent USA Corporation is the latest innovation to help take your tree nut, tree fruit, vine, and vegetable crops to the next level. MycoApply Endomax contains a unique blend of four mycorrhizal fungi that colonizes a plant's roots to create a symbiotic root and mycelial network. Where water is limited, this enhanced network improves plant vigor by expanding the root's ability to efficiently absorb water and nutrients under variable environmental conditions. Ultimately, MycoApply Endomax helps deliver consistent plant health and overall performance to optimize yield. Plus, MycoApply Endomax is OMRI listed for organic production. Maximize your crop's potential with new MycoApply Endomax from Valent. For more information, contact your PCA or visit valent.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef, and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. Now more of the stories you'll want to know today. Secretary Perdue visited a summer meals site in Washington, D.C. to highlight the importance of a program that provides meals to kids when school is not in session. Here's Stephanie Ho with more.
On a recent morning at the Turkey Thicket Recreation Center in Washington, D.C., Secretary Perdue arrived and, being the grandfather that he is, made a beeline for the children. After a few minutes of play, he went to the kitchen to wash his hands so he could hand out breakfast to the kids.
Thank you. Thank you.
He discussed the food with his new friend, Bailey.
Apple.
And
milk.
And granola. There you go. It's more importantly why we're here, obviously, is to talk about the summer feeding program. I'm really pleased that the president saw fit to add another $50 million in the budget for the summer feeding program.
Andrea Farmer, the official who handles USDA summer meals program, says one of the biggest challenges to the program is letting people know about it.
And the reason that some people might think that it's a new program is because sometimes it is still a best kept secret.
Now that you know the secret, how do you find an eligible site near you?
Information is available online through the USDA Summer Food Rocks website for kind of a desktop or a laptop platform. People can call 211 in a number of states to receive information about summer meals and other forms of emergency food assistance.
That was Derek Lambert with the No Kid Hungry campaign, which runs a texting hotline to let people know where they can go to find summer meals.
Families can text food or comida to 877-877 and receive information about summer meal sites in their area. The service operates in English and Spanish, hence the different keywords.
Meanwhile, back at the Turkey Thicket Rec Center, Secretary Perdue noted a drop-off in the number of children eating free or reduced-price meals during the school year compared with during the summer.
These are volunteer types of things where people come. Transportation, obviously, is an impediment.
Since it is hard for some children to go to the sites, the secretary said USDA is looking at alternatives.
We can look at expanding the EBT card program into other areas that where there may not be programs like this where they can come in or don't have the transportation needs to come in.
More than 20 million children are eligible for free or reduced-priced lunches during the school year, but only a fraction of them participate in the summer meals program. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
We celebrate a lot of things in this country, so why not pay homage to one of this country's major frozen assets? Here's Gary Crawford.
How do you get hundreds of people to come to a very hot parking lot in 90-degree weather? Huh? Very simple. Offer free all-you-can-eat ice cream.
We have about 500 gallons of ice cream here today, so let's see if we can eat it all up before we leave.
You know, and it worked. Out here in a parking lot across from the Agriculture Department, just off the mall in Washington, D.C., the head of the International Dairy Foods Association, Michael Dykes, was leading a celebration of ice cream. One notable celebrant, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue.
I know it may be a little cheesy, but I'm one of these kind of guys. Ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
Yeah, we added the music later just for effect. But now, let's churn up the volume for ice cream history. Sort of. Rome, sometime around 50 years A.D. Emperor Nero there orders ice brought down from the mountains and combined with fruit toppings for a sort of iced dessert. And then we skip to the 1300s and Italian explorer and merchant Marco... Marco... Yeah, him. He brings an early form of actual ice cream to Europe. And then Quaker settlers bring their ice cream recipes to North America, where later Ben Franklin, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson were known to eat ice cream. Then, 1851, the first ice cream factory is built in Pennsylvania. And finally, in the late 1870s, industrial refrigeration technology brings ice cream to the masses. Then,
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
In 1953, when this song was a hit, the Baskin-Robbins Company is formed. It brings out 31 flavors, one for every day of the month. And today,
chocolate peanut butter.
butter, cookie butter, spectacular coffee.
There are hundreds and hundreds of flavors, so many that even Michael Dykes couldn't tell us how many, except to say,
the dairy case is exploding. Each day we have another flavor or another application. It's absolutely a dynamic industry.
And the flavors get wilder all the time.
I've made a lot of disgusting ice cream that has been really bad.
Ed Cornell has a small ice cream company here in D.C., and he's not chicken to experiment with flavors.
I made some fried chicken ice cream that was a close and disgusting approximation of fried chicken.
Michael Dyke says that really doesn't surprise him. He knows about a potato chip ice cream.
And now we're seeing a lot of sea salt caramel or salted peanut vanilla ice cream. And the reason why you're seeing more of that is the sweet taste buds on your tongue transport that to the brain, but they need sodium. And so the more sodium or the more salt you have, the faster that transmission occurs. So adding a salty thing to ice cream makes it actually taste sweeter.
Meanwhile, Dyke says this country produces just under 40 million gallons of ice cream a year.
On average, Americans eat about 23 pounds of ice cream a year.
To which Agriculture Secretary Perdue said,
I get my 23 pounds, I can tell you that.
So that's the scoop on ice cream. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.